If you think about the books or movies or TV shows that you like, I bet if there are ones that you consume over and over and over again, the reason is that there is something about a character in one of those stories that resonates with you, or there's something about that character's personality that you want to see how that character would act in a variety of situations. And kind of a little bit of a lowest common denominator, culturally speaking, if we thought of a character that most of us have come in contact with and enjoyed, we have this character of Sherlock Holmes. And Sherlock's character is able to be transported lots of places. And you still enjoy it, and you still consume it, and you still say, that's Sherlock Holmes, even though now Sherlock's got a cell phone instead of a horse and buggy. It's still Sherlock, because there's something about the character of Sherlock that remains the same. And in fact, if you've encountered a Sherlock adaptation that you like, it probably has nothing to do with the way the mystery was solved. It has something to do with some characteristic or personality trait of Sherlock that you thought they just didn't get right. That was not the way you envisioned it. But another reason you like that is because you get to see Sherlock interacting with other characters. In fact, you get to see Sherlock interacting with John Watson, who has a whole different set of characteristics and traits. And what's interesting about the way that they solve these unsolvable mysteries, these impossible enigmas, has nothing to do, your enjoyment as a reader has nothing to do with the cleverness of the result, or even the impossibility of what's unknown. But it has to do that you see Sherlock and John Watson interact and come to learn more about one another as they go on this mystery. In fact, most of the mysteries could not be solved if these character traits about Sherlock and Watson did not come together in some kind of great personality reaction that resulted in the mystery being solved. And so we come to stories because we love the characters, and we love the characters because they have traits about them that we wish to embody, or we know that we embody and don't wish to embody, and sometimes those characters resonate with us as well. And the story this morning of Sarah and Abraham, of Hagar and Ishmael and Isaac, is a story full of characters that we've only started to meet in the lectionary. In fact, we don't have time to meet them all. But what's great about stories and characters and the way plots unfold is that it is unpredictable, even though we've learned something unchangeable about the characters when we have encountered them the first time. So last week, we had a story about Sarah and Abraham, and in that story, we learned some really important things about them. We learned that Abraham is hospitable to the nth degree, that people can just show up at his Bedouin camp that he has made, and whoever comes by, he will feed them dinner. And that he is willing to accommodate even the most outrageous of requests and participate in conversations that are ridiculous. Abraham likes to take care of those around him. Sarah, on the other hand, we found out from her that she's pretty skeptical. So much so that she laughs when she hears that she'll have a child. And it's not unrealistic skepticism. She is over 90 years old, but she has heard, and this conversation is going on outside her tent, that she'll have a child. And she is skeptical so much that she guffaws at it. She doesn't just snicker to herself. She laughs in such a way that they can hear her outside of the tent. But we learned something else about her too. She's very sensitive about the way she appears. Because when she is put on the spot and they say, Sarah, we heard you laughing, she said, I did not laugh. I didn't laugh. And you know what the result of that's going to be? You get to have a child now, and you know what you get to name? He Laughs. So you're going to have a child. It's going to be named He Laughs. So we learned some things about Abraham and Sarah last week that I think we will find, you know, those characters' traits that we found last week will also become part of this story, this strange story about this person, Hagar, who we have not met yet. And so we got to take a few steps back to get to where we are today in this epic story of Sarah and Abraham. So the story of Abraham starts, by the way, I'll do this very fast. We could be here a while. It is the high points. Sarah starts, God makes a promise to Abraham. God makes a promise to Abraham that he is going to be the source of a great number of people, multitudes of folks that will go and they will bless the earth. And it's a strange promise that he makes to Abraham in his old age, because at this point, Abraham has no children. And we don't know how long this takes, but God comes back and then he makes the promise to Abraham again. And Abraham still has not had children in all this interim period. How is he going to father a great nation? And after the second time God has made this promise, Abraham and Sarah do what every, you know, good, faithful person does, which is they take the promises of God into their own hands. Maybe you've heard this saying before, pray like everything depends on God, act like everything depends on you. By the way, that's not faith. But they do this, and they do a legal thing, which there are just so many parts of this story that are uncomfortable, which is, if you're a woman that's rich like Sarah is, I mean, her name means princess, by the way. She's a rich woman, and she's got lots of servants who can have children, and she owns them. Hagar is not just like somebody she interviewed and hired. Hagar is her property. And because Hagar is her property, any child that she bears is Sarah's. And so Hagar says, or Sarah says, there's no way I'm having a child now. I'm way too old. But this promise has to go forward. So she makes it so Hagar can have Abraham's son. And Hagar does. And at that point, this thing that we see today where Hagar has to leave because Sarah is jealous of her, that actually happened before. And once before, Hagar is driven out of Sarah and Abraham's Bedouin camp. When she gets out there, she encounters a divine messenger who tells her that she is going to have this son and gives her the name of the son, which is God Hears. And so both sons of Abraham eventually are going to be sons that are named divinely. And they're named by things that are important about their characters and their stories. With Isaac, he is the son of laughter. Laughter because of old age, laughter because of skepticism. And Ishmael, he's the son that God hears, because twice his mother will be cast out into the wilderness and on the brink of dying, one time when she is pregnant. And then today in the story we have where he is 13 years old, in both times she will cry out and God will hear and care for her. So you can see how all these characteristics start to be put into place. Hagar is one who cries out. Sarah is one that's skeptical. Abraham is one that's accommodating. And so when you get in the tale today, you can see how these dynamics are happening. Isaac and Ishmael, brothers, half-brothers, are playing with one another. In fact, the text actually says they're laughing with one another. And they're laughing with one another. That sets off this other thing we learned about Sarah, which is she's very concerned about her appearance. And it's time to get rid of that other child that's around, now that it seems like the proper way for God to carry out his promise of a great nation has been fulfilled. And so Sarah, at this point, is even though Hagar has come back, she is going to send Hagar out again, because now we don't need this other route. This plan B that we enacted is no longer necessary. And so she goes to Abraham and says, I know we kicked her out before and she came back, but it's time to kick her out again. I don't want to see her. I don't want my son playing with her. I certainly don't want my son laughing with her. And I don't want my son sharing the promise with her. And then Abraham's characteristic of accommodation, his characteristic of hospitality, kicks in, and the text says that Abraham is distressed by this. He is not just like, do whatever you want. He's not like, yes, Isaac's my son, and that's the one where the promise is going to happen. He's generally torn up, and there is no way he wants to send away this woman and his son out into a place where they most certainly will die. But then another character shows up who actually has been present the whole time in this story, but we often don't think about as a character, and that is God comes and talks to Abraham. And God interacts in this situation, and who knows, like, what God thought he was kicking off when he made this promise, because, as I said, stories are interesting when unpredictable things happen, even though people act in the ways that they are wired to act. And God made a promise, and that promise turned into a slave woman having a child and being kicked out two times from a home of the father of the child. And God shows up, and the first thing he says to Abraham is, do not be distressed. Do not be distressed, Abraham. I'm a character in the story, and the interaction that's happening to you in an unpredictable way, something that you thought that you got past, I will go and I will act in the way that you know me to act, and I'll take care of this child as well. And so Hagar leaves, and they do go out in the wilderness, and they're almost certainly going to die. And God shows up, and in a way you might not think, he provides water for them. And in fact, just the way he showed up to Abraham and said, do not be distressed, he shows up to Hagar and says, do not be afraid. I've already heard. He uses the son's name when he says he's heard the son. He said, I've heard. It's a doubling. Because God's characteristic is one of promise. And even if that promise you think is going to be enacted by the proper son of Isaac, it doesn't just stop there. It's much bigger. Even the plan B that maybe they should have enacted, maybe they shouldn't have, who knows? God is unconcerned about that. He's going to bless and prosper this other son just as much as he's going to bless and prosper Isaac, because God's character is of one of promise. And no matter what has occurred and what situations have happened, God is going to fulfill God's promises. Now, the reason I think this is important is because there are two things happening here. One is, we often do not think about God as a character in the story reacting by God's personality traits to what has occurred by other folks. In fact, I would say mostly we think of God as though he has just written the story and watched it happen. And if God interacts in it, God is just there to kind of like course correct. But not that God is making decisions with God's own free will, based on the decisions other people that God cares about are making. But this story of Abraham and Sarah, and it's not just this one, it is through a through story of this whole thing. That God makes a promise and Abraham makes a decision, then God responds to Abraham's decision or Sarah's decision or Hagar's decision. God is a dynamic and interactive character in the story of God's creation. That's the first thing for us to change our thinking about God. He is not solidified in some immutable deity that does not come and try out new things and make new decisions in the moment based on the decisions his creation has made. But the second thing is the assurance to know that in those moments, no matter what it is that we have done, no matter what it is that we maybe have tried to take over, when we did pray, like, God, everything, you're going to do everything, but I'm going to act like I do everything, doesn't matter. God's characteristic of promise will be the characteristic that overrules all other characteristics. And I think that's just a totally different way for us to be people of faith. Being people of faith, knowing that God, even though God has things that are the same yesterday, today, and forever, that's the promise part. but that God is interacting in each infinitesimally small moment with the universe that God has made and responding to it in the appropriate way, in ways that surprise, in ways that are unpredictable, but mostly in ways that keep God's promise. Amen.